Our first speaker this afternoon is Kay Seaver, President, Optimize Consulting. Kay's 30-year career in surface and underground mining began with the design and implementation of Thompson Creek's first mobile equipment tracking system. Kay is the founder of Optimize Consulting and helps management teams optimize equipment, reduce costs, coordinate projects, solve problems, work together more effectively, and accelerate change. In her presentation, Truth, Trust, and Tons, Solutions for the Hidden Cost of Reactive Cultures in Mining, she will explain how a new perspective on change, understanding the truth about sabotage, and management strategies that design a cultural engine will maximize production, minimize costs, and improve department relationships, even between operations and maintenance. How about a warm welcome for Kay?
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. After being in the industry 30 years, and after helping mines improve mobile equipment performance, plant performance, culture change, even support function processes that directly relate to production, or maybe indirectly relate, like permitting. At the end of the day, if we are not free to speak the truth about problems, and if there is no trust either between the workforce and management or within the management team itself, we are fooling ourselves as to how much we can really accomplish with anything we try to change. And so, it's the reason for our topic today. I love going on site. I believe a mine is an absolutely beautiful thing, and I can't wait to get there every time I have the opportunity. But today, we're going to be speaking and looking at the final frontier of change, the place where no change initiative goes, and the place where most of the sabotage occurs to all the great efforts that all our people give to improve performance of equipment, costs, and culture. Oh, dear. So, truth, trust, and tons. Three powerful words. We combine them, and pretty soon we are building strong teams that deliver more production. Today, we're going to talk about the connection between those four words, and specifically, the connection between trust and the bottom line. Before we do that, let's talk about culture for a moment. If we look up the definition of culture, if any of you have ever done that, it's no wonder we have trouble changing culture. It's really difficult to even understand the definitions. It's almost like they were written by sociology professors. I believe that it's easier to come up with a simple definition, how people interact with equipment and each other. In fact, there's one more that's even better. What people are thinking as they interact with equipment and each other. If we understand that, we have the key to successful change. So let's go exploring and see what we can learn about that. Before we do that, let's add the word reactive and see what that really means to our operations. These are four things that I listed here that reflect a reactive culture. We could probably list 20. Superintendents won't collaborate. And by the way, I'm listing these because I personally have had experience with these as barriers to change when I'm helping operations improve performance. Supervisors being inconsistent with crews, support departments that don't really support production, and people that are afraid to talk about problems, we call these the culture and we say, it's just the way it is here. Or maybe we say, we'd like to change. And let's say we would like to change. Let's look at the traditional approach for a moment. There's usually three pieces to that. We always start with improving productivity to cost, and there's a certain set of expectations that come with that work. Then we look at our people skills and we modify communications and follow through. And in the end, we expect more profit and less problems for that work. We make a lot of promises about what that work will deliver, and now our credibility is on the line. And many times, we come up short. Where change is not sustained and opportunities are not captured, and culturally, our plants may feel like a shark tank, filled with conflict and confusion and mistrust between the workforce and management or within the management team itself. And we've invested potentially millions of dollars expecting that if we change process, culture will change. Maybe we've implemented a new planning process for maintenance. Maybe we've got a new training program for our operators. And still, we find this problem and we still need to change. So what is the problem? I believe that it's preconceived ideas. I'm going to present some things to you that you may not have considered before in relation to this topic. Let's reflect a moment on what's happened over the past 100 years in improvement history for part of the clue to why change may be difficult. If we would go back 100 years, we'd find ourselves in Ford Motor Company. All of you know the history of the mass production and how Ford was on the leading edge of all that. And as part of that process, they began recognizing that they could benefit from some simple things to measure. And so that's where it all began. And as the decades progressed, we morphed that work into TQM, continuous improvement, in the 50s and 60s, followed by Six Sigma in the 80s and Lean in the 90s. And yet, we've always started change with process. We've promised changes that did not occur. And we believed that management's role did not really require or involve change in a major way, that they were residing on the outside, and that that seemed normal and acceptable and just the way change worked. I believe we've been starting change in the wrong place. So let's explore what that means for a moment. I believe the final frontier is management's opportunity to change, that we've never fully tapped into that. And to begin that discussion, I'd like to talk about collisions. Now, this morning, you know, we saw software that helps prevent collisions. Here, we're not talking about haul trucks colliding in the pit or water trucks colliding on the tailings dam or delivery trucks colliding in the warehouse parking lot. These collisions don't require an incident report. They're virtual, but they occur every single day, sometimes behind closed doors, sometimes in meetings, and they are not recognized as a barrier to change. So let's see what is the source of these collisions. I'd like to examine the change process for a moment from 30,000 feet. If we look at the triggers, the reason that we decide it's important to change, we either recognize weaknesses in the things that we're doing currently, or maybe management just desires better results. So they do something to initiate change. It could be on a small scale, it could be on a very large scale. It requires lots of resources and a huge investment. Through that work, we gain process knowledge and we implement change. And we expect gains and benefits at the end of that work. But what happens when they don't materialize? Do we think we've picked the wrong initiative? Maybe we need to shop for another one? Often upper management will believe that. Gee, we just picked the wrong one. We better go do another one. It will probably deliver the the change that we had hoped for and expect. What if there's something else going on here? Let's talk about collisions for a moment. When we implement change, we learn something new about our business. Collisions are a natural part of the change process. They occur when whatever we've learned or whatever needs to change to gain the value and bring dollars to the bottom line collides with the management system. And in this case, I've split the management system into two pieces, management processes and management beliefs and behaviors. And under processes, there's a long list. I didn't put them in here. But some of them are numbers-based tools and decision-making tools. Some are organizational tools that we use day-to-day for restructuring, for communication strategies, for project scopes and project involvement. Those things all fall under process. Then there's our beliefs. What do we believe about change? What do we as managers believe is our responsibility to take responsibility for, and maybe what we feel is somebody else's responsibility? What do we believe about meeting expectations and what's acceptable choices to make when it comes to that? These are things that aren't addressed within the scope of a change initiative, but those beliefs are critical to what happens next. Because now we've got a mindset about change, however that's defined, and it's management's choice when there's a collision that makes the difference between capturing benefits and creating trust and forfeiting benefits and losing trust. So let's explore this some more. Again, going back to our final frontier, we've got our management system up here with processes and beliefs and behaviors distinguished. And here comes our learnings and improvement goals. And I don't know if you can see it, but there's little gold bars up in that box that represents value that we've discovered, that we can tap into, that we can capture. And then there's a collision. And what happens next can change everything. As we go through this, the one thing that I'd like for you to think about is raising awareness about these issues. Most management teams and managers at any level, if we're talking about supervisor all the way to the CEO, are well-intentioned, good people. But a lack of awareness is preventing them from understanding how their choices in the moment impact culture and their ability to capture gains. So, if we have a collision, management choice determines whether potential ends up being trapped or released. It determines whether there's a negative impact on trust and profit and culture and change, or whether that is a positive impact that actually accelerates change in a great way. Mixed messages are a core reason why we cannot capture the change that we've worked so hard to deliver. And if we look at these signs for a moment, on the left we have two signs. One says, do not enter, and entrance only. Which of you would turn in, and which of you would pass that entrance? Not sure which sign is true. Not sure what to believe. The same on the right. One says, keep right. The other one says, turn left. Which way do we go? Not sure. If we translate these signs into the messages we receive from management at any level, they are a major generator of reactive cultures and mistrust, which then become barriers to capturing the potential that we've worked so hard to identify and quantify. Mindsets are the source of words and actions. What people believe ultimately determines what they say and what they do. Now, when we think about training, we say, oh, well, we're sending our people to leadership training, and we're teaching them what to say and do differently in a meeting setting, or with their people maybe in the morning meeting before a shift change, or at any level. Just telling them to do things differently, both in words and actions, is really not enough, and I'll tell you why. Maybe for normal planned activities, things that we do every day, maybe reviewing the plan for the day, maybe communicating about certain things that we want our people to remember about safety. All these are planned activities. But in the moment of a breakdown, that's when everybody's really tested. And generally, in a moment of a breakdown, what they really believe up here is going to come out here, and it's going to come out reflected in what they do. So ultimately, changing that belief about the change process itself and what value is at stake will do more to influence words and actions that promote change, that encourage change, that remove barriers than almost anything that we can do. And if words and actions either match or don't match, that's the moment when we build trust or trust is torn down. So if we fail there and our actions deviate from what we said would happen, we're sending mixed messages, maybe not even being aware of that. And at that point, people don't trust exactly which position management is taking. And it tends to shut communication down, especially about problems. If we can keep those aligned, now we've got freedom to speak, and amazing things can happen. I'm hoping that you can see this slide. I use this slide a lot when I meet with management teams. It's one of my favorites. There's three rabbits holding up a stagecoach. These rabbits have pistols on these stagecoach drivers, and the stagecoach drivers have their hands up, and the caption says, "This ain't gonna look good on our report, Leroy." These guys don't want to tell anybody they're held up by rabbits. How embarrassing is that? That's never supposed to happen. And when we have things happen in the workplace that are unexpected, or maybe we made a promise they wouldn't happen again, we thought we had it fixed, it's difficult for people to maybe come forth with everything they know about that problem so that we can fix the root cause. And anytime there's a hesitancy here, there's value that we're sacrificing. Freedom to speak opens the door to trust and potential, and management's response either keeps that door open or closes it. This is a reactive culture KPI that I came up with. I can't tell you through my career how many times I'm at a mine site, and it can be, I can be in the office or out in the plant or wherever. And people know that I'm there, and they know I'm there to help them. And I might hear this voice say, "Okay, come in here a minute and shut the door. There's something I'd like to tell you." Well, it's something, and it's not, by the way, that we're not talking about any confidential personality or personnel issue here. It's usually about a problem they can't tell anybody else about. These are closed doors, and I believe that there's an inverse relationship between trust and closed-door discussions in every company. Now, just to stop here for a moment, I don't want anybody here going back to their office and saying, "Kay Seaver told me that you guys should keep your doors open from now on, so I don't want anybody to shut their door." That's not what this is about, obviously. It's about what people feel free to speak about in the workplace. And sometimes the most important thing to fix is only talked about behind closed doors, which means we never fix it. And years can go by, and perhaps that problem is worth millions of dollars. Usually that problem is related somehow or tied to something in the management system, not just to a piece of equipment. Something to be aware of here is the performance culture connection between management and the workforce. And if you're serious about capturing all the upside potential that your equipment can deliver, that your cost structure can deliver, that your people can deliver, keeping this connection open is your access to that potential. And if there's not trust, access will be denied. And it'll be something that you're not aware of. You're not aware of the amount of dollars necessarily on the line for this reason. But it will happen behind the scenes, subtly, and is something that's rarely, if ever, measured. I'd like to go through three examples here related to the power of management's choice. This particular one involves numbers. There's many choices made about numbers that change culture positively or negatively, and those choices are all made by management. Let's say we have a loading improvement team that uncovers shovel delays that were not accounted for in the budget. Now, I'm sure nothing like this has ever happened to you guys before. We can substitute hauling, drilling, any other function in there. I do a lot of work in delay analysis, and I've discovered this kind of issue more often than I wish I had. The question is, we've got a collision happening now, and what is going to happen next? We could probably spend 30 minutes just on this issue if we were to dissect fully all the options there. But if management makes the wrong choice, it changes trust, profit, culture, credibility, and if they make the right choice, it changes it in a positive way. How they respond to that situation. Us versus them. I want to use football as an example here. Let's say we have a quarterback and running back. They're at practice the day before the big game. And something happens during practice, and they have a disagreement. And it's time for the big game. They're in there playing. The quarterback hasn't forgotten this, and he's holding a grudge against the running back. And it's time for him to throw the ball for the winning touchdown. But he doesn't want the running back to get credit for that touchdown. And so he decides not to throw the ball, and he's tackled, and he loses the game. And you're thinking, you know, why would she bring up an example like that? That never happens in sports. It probably doesn't. If it does, it probably only happens once and the quarterback's out of there. The point is, it happens a lot in business. A lot more than it should. When we've got departments who, for various reasons, choose not to support each other when they can, they are making the same kind of choice as that quarterback did for his team, which he was a part of. He was playing like he was on another team. Sometimes our departments play like they're a member of a different team. I call these choices million-dollar choices with no accountability. Examples might be as simple as choosing to go to a meeting to solve a problem or not. Choosing to work with a department head that 5 years ago you had a disagreement with, and you still remember that. Or maybe the guy embarrassed you in a meeting, and you still remember that. And so now it's time to work with him to solve a problem, and you just flat don't want to talk to that person. Again, the reason I'm bringing these up is I find these kind of attitudes more than I should. These are the kinds of things, again, that aren't addressed within the scope of change initiatives. They reside on the outside, but they surely impact the results of that work. Why do people choose these kinds of actions? First of all, they may believe they have permission to. Permission is implied to make those kinds of subjective decisions when they become a member of management. Maybe they watch their boss do the same thing and they're up and coming and they say, well, you know, this is the way he managed. I'm learning from him or have learned some things. I guess it's okay for me to make those kinds of choices too. Maybe there's people on site that would love to address this. They recognize what it's doing to the culture and potentially performance, and they lack the courage to do that, and so they go unaddressed. This may seem a strange thing to throw in here for a moment, but I'd like to do that. A mine is a mill turned inside out. What do I mean by that? Well, if you think about a mill for a moment, all the equipment's connected, pretty much. There's guys in the control room that are monitoring its performance. They're there to make corrections, but for the most part, the thing runs pretty well. And every once in a while, there's an out-of-control event that they have to correct. In a mine, people sit inside the equipment. And all the equipment is detached. And it's more important than ever to have a common, single mindset about what you're all there to do. Mindsets make mines run great. They're critical to maximizing production. So if we look at this chart about process orientation, for those of you that may never have heard of that, it's actually a strategy that we use to bring people together to create this single mindset for working together. I will tell you that executives hope that their people think like this. Sometimes they assume that they think like this during projects, process changes, improvement initiatives, when in fact everybody's thinking like that up there. And we wonder why things go slow, seem complicated, seem hard to do, can't get people to work together. And if the executive team themselves don't think like this, then nobody else will either. So this is one of these mindsets that must be driven from the very top of the company down in order for everyone to believe that this is the right thing to do, because incentive plans will drive these kinds of behaviors. Communication plans will drive these kind of behaviors. The way projects are managed is a huge difference between the bottom one and the top one. Functionally, over here at the left, we see operations, maintenance, warehouse, purchasing, accounting. Let's say those five departments are those people up there. If they're thinking like that and they're trying to solve a problem within those groups, it's going to be hard to do because everybody's got a different agenda. Same with drilling, loading, hauling, crushing, milling. It's going to be hard to do. But if we've got all five of those departments thinking like this, amazing things happen to performance. And really, our chance for optimization is great. Solutions for real change. Let's talk about some of those. Sometimes change feels like this, with barriers diverting our attention. What if we could actually raise awareness enough to eliminate some of those so we could go faster? Remember that management's hidden barriers have no natural enemies, so we have to work intentionally to take them down, so we need to know how to recognize those to do that. There's million-dollar mindset shifts from reactive. I'd like to just focus on these four for a minute. Some of you may relate directly to some of these. We just want to meet budget. We are victims of our own culture. We protect our power, and we will make money if people will just do what we tell them to. Now, what if we could shift those mindsets to this? From, we just want to meet budget, to how good can we be? That one shift is the connection to your potential. But again, everybody from the top down needs to be thinking like this. It changes the questions you ask about the budget, about capital, about expansion capital, about projects and ROIs, about project contingencies. It changes the way you think about communications. There's so much attached to that mindset. The others are important too. But if I was to pick one, that first shift, I believe, is the most important. So if we were to start down a new path for change, what would it look like? Well, we've now discovered that mindsets drive words and actions, and we now know that mindsets drive mixed messages. And mixed messages cause fear in the workplace. Politics hides problems, and our potential is trapped. However, if we can replace mixed messages with trust, now we have freedom to speak, problems fixed, and potential is released. I believe it's possible to create what I call a culture engine. Here's our process steps involved in that. Starts with freedom to speak, management's reaction to that news, action matching words, and if we can get through those three, all of a sudden, we've got trust that we can build on. Let's say during this process flow, at any point, if we have a no instead of a yes, it's going to throw us into reactive. High losses, stagnation, weak teams. But if we can make it all the way through, so there's a yes, 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 now we've got something that behaves more like an engine, where we've got a constant feeding of, because we've got a trust relationship, we've got open communications. Because we've got open communications, people can feel free to share any question, anything, without being told to, I don't want to hear that, that's off the table, we can't talk about that here. Amazing things happen when you can get the culture engine in place. Just remember, as trust goes up, losses go down. And you'll notice I've got two kinds of losses here, financial losses related to tonnage and cost, and cultural losses, which are really important to consider. I was asked to change culture between maintenance and operations once, and I encountered a culture that was the worst I'd ever seen in my career. So bad that the people I was working with had no one to tell, because the management team on site was part of the problem. And so anything that they said would not have been received in a way that was productive. And so they were trapped in this terrible place of almost desperation, no hope. And I can't begin to tell you what it meant to them when we were finally able to begin speaking freely about what the truth was about that situation, so that they could begin trusting each other. Amazing things happened. We didn't fix everything, but over a seven-month period, the plant went to a whole new level of performance, and this was the work. Courageous choices. That word is there for a reason. You know, process work is really easy when it comes down to it. We make it very complex sometimes with Six Sigma and Lean and all of the methodologies you have to learn with all that, and all the tools and all the data. This is the hard work right here. If somebody's behaving over here like this, and they have been for a long time, and we're asking them to make a different choice, it takes a lot of courage for them to do that. Because everybody's already got this perceived personality attached to them. And if they start behaving differently, what are people going to think? It's one of the greatest barriers to change. But if you can help people get over there and create an environment where it's safe to change, again, amazing things happen. Courageous choices. I want to talk about my culture heroes for a minute. Great moments are built from great opportunities. You probably remember Herb Brooks, the coach of the 1980 gold medal hockey team. He said this, and I want to talk about some great moments briefly before I close. Three case studies. Superintendents of operations and maintenance that were used to blaming each other every single time there was a breakdown. And all of their people heard the blaming because it was done in a joint plant meeting. Once those superintendents chose something different to say, everybody else chose something different to say too. Shift supervisors letting go of the past. Two guys had been feuding for 5 years, and every once in a while their rotations had them work together. And things never went well in shift when they worked together. Problems were not solved. They argued a lot, and this had been going on for a very long time. And in the moment, they made a choice to let go of the past. I heard about it later. It was very cool. What a wonderful example these guys set for everybody else in the plant. Remember our rabbit slide earlier? Our mine manager, I was with a team back east, and we got to the rabbit slide, and the mine manager stopped the meeting. I was going through training slides, and he said, "Kay, stop the meeting." I said, "Okay." And I sat down, and he stood up. And for the next 10 minutes, he talked about things they'd never spoken about before. He said, "Guys, we sure have a lot of rabbits around here." And do you know, from that moment on, that group of people were able to solve problems they'd never been able to solve between departments because he gave everybody permission to speak about it. Our common hero elements include all of these. The courage to try is just such a critical element in that. If you start down this journey, expect there to be three phases of work. First, we acknowledge the truth about what the situation is. Then we go through a burial removal process and ultimately move over to this area where people can really be much more productive. If it's a new operation, what a great opportunity to build into the management system basically a preventive approach to barriers, to change, from the get-go, before startup. So we've learned a lot about truth and trust and tons today. These are some parting thoughts I'd like to leave with you. Seek the truth, protect trust in your own credibility. Be a culture hero. The world needs more of them. Truth builds trust. Trust builds teams. Learn your barriers. Remove your barriers. Prevent improvement sabotage. Remember that culture is a choice. It's management's choice. You have a great opportunity, and you are much closer to achieving your goals for change than you believe you are. Maybe all you need is a new perspective. Thank you.